Hello, and a very warm welcome to New in Events, a podcast from IBTM. My name is Mike Fletcher.
And I'm Paul Cook. And together we'll be diving into the world of events professionals and interviewing key figures to unearth new thinking, new ideas, and up-to-date advice for industry newcomers.
New in Events is for everyone working in the meetings, incentive, conference, and event sectors. You may have recently got a job in this industry and you're looking to learn from more experienced players, or you may be a seasoned pro looking for new solutions, new ways of working, and inspiration for how your events can evolve for the future.
Whichever part of the events industry you work in, and no matter how long you've been one of us, you've come to the right place.
New episodes of Season 1 will be available throughout the first half of 2024, so don't forget to follow and subscribe on whichever channel you download your podcast from.
Or you can follow us and IBTM Events on social media, and we'll let you know every time a new episode is published.
So, let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome to Episode 3 of New in Events, a podcast by IBTM. I'm here with my co-host Paul Cook, and today's episode is all about incentive travel. And it's a bit of a star-spangled episode, Paul.
It certainly is, Mike. Star-spangled indeed. We travel across the pond to St. Louis in the state of Missouri, and then we move across to Los Angeles. And you can't get any more star-spangled than that, can you?
Absolutely. We have Darren Green. He's the Chief Sales Officer for the LA Tourism and Convention Board, and he's going to bring us all the Hollywood glitz and glamour when we spoke to him on the show floor at IBTM World in Barcelona last year. But first, we're going to speak to the President of the Incentive Research Foundation. That's Stephanie Harris, and she's going to tell us all about the Incentive Travel Index and some of the key trends in the incentive travel market. Let's hear what she has to say.
So the Incentive Research Foundation is just that. It's a foundation. It's not an association. And I think it's always important to point that out, because the work that we do to provide research and education to the incentives industry, that work is all done complimentary. It's all available to anyone in the industry via our website. So we don't have membership. And that is the beautiful thing about being a foundation. Our goal is to really dig into different areas of non-cash incentives and provide research and enhance understanding so people who are using non-cash incentives can maximize their investment.
We're all about unearthing new ideas, new insights, and new ways of working. So what would you say are some of the different roles that you might find for people that want to work in incentive travel? What's available?
First of all, I want people to want to work in incentive travel more than anything. There's a defined lack of awareness about incentive travel as a career path. And we're actually working on some initiatives to help address that. But when it comes to the incentives industry, there are kind of two core categories. You have the supplier category, whether that's a hotel, airline, a destination management company, a DMO that is promoting a destination. And then you have the buyer side of the equation. These are the people who own the programs, either in corporations or own the program operations through agencies who specialize in the design and delivery of incentive travel programs. There's kind of endless career paths around incentives.
It's an exciting industry to be a part of, isn't it?
It is. I'll tell you, when I came into it, a shockingly long time ago, I didn't really know it existed. I kind of stumbled into it and found it and fell in love with it and have not left.
Fantastic. So you mentioned destination management companies and DMOs. What's the difference and how important are these roles to buyers of incentive travel?
Both of them are incredibly important in the incentive travel ecosystem, but they do play different roles and there's some confusion around them. So the DMOs tend to be organizations that have a responsibility for promoting a destination. They are a neutral, kind of non-competitive, an organization like Destination Canada Business Events. Their role is to promote all things Canada, to know and understand the resources across all things Canada, and to connect you, the incentive travel buyer, with the right people to fulfill on what you need. A DMC, once you know where you're placing your program, a DMC are those individuals who are going to provide on the ground services. And that might be connecting you with a venue. It might be providing the transportation, decor, theming ideas. Oh my gosh, the creativity that comes out of DMCs. So they play very different roles. I will say that I think in incentive travel, the DMOs, the destination organizations, I think are often underutilized. We think about them for these big citywide kind of programs, convention programs, but people don't tap into them as much for incentives. And I think it's a miss.
No, it's interesting. So awareness of what's available through the DMOs would be great. Do you find that incentive travel is primarily managed from the agency side, or is it corporate, or is it a mix of both? What would you say?
The program owners themselves, the people who are really determining how they're motivating the employees of an organization, sit in the corporation itself. But I would say there's a pretty even split, maybe a little heavier to organizations, those corporate program owners working with an agency to design and deliver the program itself, the actual incentive travel experience. The corporate program owners may work with an agency to design a rule structure, but often that's a discussion that's happening at that corporate level. You know, how people qualify to win the program is such an internal discussion and debate, and involves the CEO and the head of sales and all of those people.
So if newcomers coming into the industry got into a corporate events team, they may well have the option to join an incentive travel program management team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they sit all over organizations. Sometimes they're in HR. Sometimes they're in the executive suite. Sometimes they're in sales and marketing.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's now talk about the Incentive Travel Index then. What is it? How often is it published? And what goes into the research?
The Incentive Travel Index is a report that we produce in cooperation with our partners at SITE. They are the Society for Incentive Travel Executives. And we work with them and Oxford Economics together to create a broad global view of the incentives industry. We produce the report annually, and this year we had a very large respondent base. We had more than 2,400 individuals respond to the survey this year. So you really get all aspects of the industry contributing their perspective, and you get a true global point of view.
Yeah, it's a global survey. That's definitely worth pointing out. How many countries?
Over 60 had respondents. We can't, of course, produce results by 60 countries, because in some cases you have a couple of people providing a response. But when we put it into regions, there's an incredible number of respondents per region, and we feel really comfortable reporting on a regional basis.
Have you seen any changes in the purpose of incentive travel? You know, I'm thinking of some of the hard power, the soft power that people talk about. And would you mind just clarifying what that is for our listeners?
Absolutely. So hard power metrics, when we talk about those relative to incentives, are things like driving increased sales or delivering return on investment. Soft power metrics tend to be things like creating corporate culture or creating affinity for the organization so that you see decreased turnover. And coming out of 2020, 2021, we saw soft power metrics really leading the way. People were dealing with remote workforces in large numbers for the first time. So they wanted to use incentives to create that sense of culture, to make sure their people had ways to connect in person. And now we're starting to see hard power come back to the table as the leading driver. It's a pretty narrow margin, though. I will say we're seeing a little more hard power driver in North America. I would say 36%, I think, globally said hard power was their driver, whereas just 30%, not a big difference. Mm-hmm. We're saying it's a mix. For me, yes, absolutely. I need to be able to measure the mathematical value and return this program is bringing to the company. But I still need all these soft power things to happen. I still need to be getting my company together and having my people have shared experiences.
And that's a lot more important these days, isn't it? Post-pandemic, the softer powers, the importance of staff retention, the importance of making people feel included within company culture, that's all come to the fore, and incentives are helping with this.
Absolutely. I think incentives has never had more of an opportunity to be part of the conversation in the C-suite than they do right now for those very reasons.
So leisure travel is bouncing back. It has bounced back since the pandemic. Business travel, including incentives, is also, it's a bit slower though, isn't it? A bit slower to return. So what would you say has come out of the latest research regarding future growth in the sector?
We certainly see optimism around incentive travel and a desire for continued growth. We see 59%, I think, of organizations are saying that they'll be spending more or significantly more in 2024. And then when we look at 2025, that number goes up to 64% saying they're going to be spending more. The growth is there. And when we asked in the index how leadership perceives these programs, we heard things like, they are absolute strategic necessities. These programs are need to haves. Gave them options to say it's a nice to have or it's a necessary evil even. And more often than not, they were choosing, I think over 90% either chose strategic or a need to have kind of program. So the future looks very bright for incentives.
That's really positive to hear. What about the challenges then? What are the challenges for the incentive travel sector?
Well, as much as those 59 and 64% saying they're spending more or significantly more this year, the reality is that more or significantly more quickly gets eaten up by inflation. The cost of everything right now is the biggest pain point for our program owners and program operators. It's an incredibly difficult time. I was working on another study and we were asking people, is your budget going up? And they were like, yes, it's absolutely going up. And we said, is it going up more than inflation? And they were like, no, darn it, it's not. Yeah. So that leaves them with having to make really difficult choices about how to make these programs still wonderful experiences for their people, but dealing with those cost issues. I would say the other big challenge is just the reality of the political challenges we have, the wars that we're seeing increasing. It's creating a bit more of a conservative, I think, approach to destinations. So there are definitely challenges facing the industry. I think what's happening now is having a huge impact on destination choice, just huge. Over 70% of the people that we surveyed said they want to go to a new destination they haven't used before. 41% said they also need to or want to be closer to home. Now, that may be to combat some of the air expense. You know, one of the biggest expenses of a program is air. So staying closer to home can often help with the air expense. But I think there's also, again, that like, let's keep our people a little closer to home. Let's make sure we're making a safe choice. The thing is, I don't think wanting to use a new destination and staying closer to home necessarily have to compete with one another. I think it opens up tremendous opportunities for what we lovingly call second tier cities, because we don't have another good name for them. But those cities that are less used, but still offer phenomenal, exciting experiences, I think it opens a huge door for them. If I was a DMO in one of those cities, boy, I would be shouting from the rooftops right now to attract those groups.
What about luxury over uniqueness? Are people preferring to stay in smaller, more boutique hotels, or is there still an appetite for five-star private dining, all those kind of things? Or are people looking for more unique experiences that don't cost as much?
Luxury always wins. When you're going on a trip that your organization is paying for, that you have worked hard to earn, luxury, it's an expectation. It's like table stakes for these programs. That said, we do see an increase in, I want to feel connected to the destination. I want to have an authentic experience with the destination. I want to go somewhere and not feel like I was given the Disney version of this destination. And that can be hard to do with a big group, but it is of increasing importance. So I think the balance of authenticity and luxury is the one that people are looking to strike more and more.
Is that where CSR, corporate social responsibility, comes into it? People are looking to leave a legacy in the destinations that they choose to attend incentive programs and actually contribute to the local communities.
I think that is a huge part of what's happening today. And when we think about some of those early CSR attempts or options that people had, Paul, I completely understand why you chuckle there, because they were just so manufactured. You didn't have an impact. And I think today, again, with this desire for authenticity, you want to understand the culture and then understand how what your group is doing or how you're spending your day can have a true lasting impact. Years and years ago, the organization I was working for, which was an agency that did incentive travel, we had our company sales and marketing trip. And one of the things that we did, this was shortly after Katrina in New Orleans, the hurricanes. And we spent a full day painting, cleaning, clearing brush out of a community park. And you could see the damage the hurricane had created. And by the end of the day, had we fixed the whole park? No. But had we cleaned up an enormous section of it where people could come out and enjoy it again? Yes. And I still think about that. That was 8 hours in the hot New Orleans sun with black paint, painting posts, and not glamorous stuff, but it had an impact. You know, we did something for that community and that felt really good, I think, for us and for the community.
Yeah, it's important, isn't it?
It really is. If you're going there and you truly want to connect, sometimes you got to get a little dirty to make it happen.
Yeah, and as long as they find that balance with luxury and you can have a spa treatment afterwards or a nice dinner, then people will always remember it. It's about creating memorable experiences.
Right back to the Ritz, where it's lovely and smells delightful and all of those things.
What about sustainability then? What about the race to net zero and those environmental issues? How will they affect the future of incentive travel?
It can be a little disheartening to see that sustainability still isn't driving choices around incentive travel programs. I would say if I talk to 50 program owners, maybe 3 of them would say the sustainability factors are driving the program choice. I do see that starting to change. What I'm hearing is out of those 50 program owners, 30 of them now ask about sustainability factors in the RFP. They want to know, or they expect that the hotels or the DMCs or the DMOs have sustainability practices in place that will help offset the impact of that program on the environment. We're also seeing organizations like the Events Industry Council create a sustainable event certificate that individuals can go in and earn. And I have told every third party, every hotelier, everyone I've spoken to over the last year, if you don't have a sustainable event professional with that certificate in your organization, I think it's really critical to send someone through the program, get out ahead of it and be thinking about it. And I say get out ahead of it for our industry, which is woefully behind. So we need to take advantage of the education. I think a lot of our hoteliers are doing incredible work on this front. And I hope it starts to become more of a decision driver.
So Stephanie, I mean, you've given us loads to think about in this time that we've had with you. I mean, if somebody's brand new, they want to forge a career, they love travel, what would be the one piece of advice that you would give to them?
I would say get educated and get involved, whether it's looking at information produced by the Incentive Research Foundation, getting involved in an organization like SITE that has lots of local chapters where you can meet and network with people, taking advantage of the materials from things like the Events Industry Council. There are a lot of resources out there that will help you both get educated and start your networking journey. Within Incentive Travel, I think the wonderful thing and one of the addictive things about this industry is how lovely everyone is. It's just a wonderful group of people. It's such a good family kind of industry that you'll find people who are absolutely willing to help and connect you. So don't be shy in reaching out to people.
Superb. That's really good advice. Thank you, Stephanie. And then finally, I guess, where can people download the research, the index?
There is a website independently called incentiveindex.com. So that's the quickest way. Or you can go to the siteglobal.com website or the irf.org, and all three paths will get you to the index.
Cool. It's a real pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast, New in Events, a podcast by IBTM.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the time.
Okay, listeners, welcome back to IBTM World, and we're in the podcast booth at the back of the media center, and I'm delighted to be joined by Darren Green. He's the Chief Sales Officer for Los Angeles Tourism and Convention Board. Welcome, Darren.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for dropping by. So tell us, what's going on at the LA stand? What's unique about the LA product?
LA is unique in so many ways, but there's so many wonderful things that are happening in the city, especially when it comes to meetings and events, and that people should know. And the first is LAX Airport is undergoing a renovation that's going to be state-of-the-art, probably one of the most expensive public works projects in the country. And it really will expand and make coming into the airport and getting away from the airport that much easier. So we've added a lot of new lifts, especially coming international and being a gateway city. It's very important for us. So that's your first experience when you come to LA.
Absolutely. Yeah. Get in the airport and get out as quick as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. And then when people enter downtown LA, the venues are all there, like the hospitality is there. What can people expect?
Well, you know, it's according on what you want to do to LA, because whether or not you want to go downtown, do you want to be in Hollywood? Do you want to be out at the beaches? Do you want to be in Malibu? So there are so many different things that you can do. We try to say, what's going to work best for you? One of the unique things that we have close to the airport when you start by is the new SoFi Stadium. It's the home of the LA Rams and the LA Chargers. And that will be the host venue when LA hosts the 2028 Olympics. So we're excited about that as well. Before the Olympics come in, we'll be hosting one of the matches that FIFA will have. And then in 2027, there's a strong possibility that we could be hosting another Super Bowl as well.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of really interesting, unique events that are coming to the city that make it such an exciting destination.
Fantastic. And if event planners want to take their events to Hollywood, is there facilities there that they can use?
Absolutely. In between the Dolby Theater, where they hold the award shows. But what's unique about Hollywood in LA is that you can do so many events on the back lots of our movie studios. So LA being home to whether it's Warner Brothers, Paramount Studios, whether it's Universal or Sony, they actually cater well to events because the back lot's already there. So you don't really have to pay for decor. Yeah, the lighting is there. It's all pretty much turnkey, but there are not many cities where you can say, I can do my event or my final night dinner or my awards event on the back lot of a studio that could have filmed Mission Impossible or Gone with the Wind or other really great movies that people can relate to. So just exciting, exciting venues. And then I would add to that the outdoor venues like the Hollywood Bowl, which is amazing. We just opened up the Academy of Motion Pictures, and that is an amazing venue as well. So LA, we like to say we almost have an embarrassment of riches, but that's what makes the LA Tourism Board so important, because when you come to us, we can direct you where you want to go. So it's a very simple question is, what do you want to experience? What is this group like? And we don't want to throw everything at you. We want to tailor make or give you options that are going to work best for your event or your meeting.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Darren. That's brilliant. Thanks for popping by the podcast booth. I can't wait to get out to LA and experience everything you've just talked about.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for having me, Mike. And just let's enjoy the rest of the show.
Incentive travel is certainly booming, I think, Mike.
Absolutely. I think the Incentive Travel Index does show that. And it's interesting to hear from somebody so involved in incentive travel, along with Darren, who represents a destination that incentive travel organisers should use. But it's not often a career that people new in events will consider, is it?
No, I don't think it is. I think it would be a bit of a stretch for a careers advisor at a school to say, do you want a career in incentive travel? They don't even say that in events. But there are so many opportunities, as Stephanie was saying. And if you want to get involved, then get involved seems to be the answer. And that is the way that it's been in the event sector as well, where you find opportunities by going to events, finding people, and then kind of finding your tribe.
Absolutely. And incentive travel is a tribe within the events industry. And as Stephanie was saying, it's a really exciting part of the industry. For anyone that's got wanderlust and loves to have a bit of travel on their CV. But there are challenges, of course, and Stephanie brought some of those up, namely sustainability and being more climate conscious and how that fits in.
Yeah, for me, it was interesting to hear about the views of the buyers, where they expect venues and destinations to be holding these high sustainable standards. And I guess that means that they can book the trips and they can decide to take their staff away for those incentives, where it's left to other people to look after the sustainable aspects. And yeah, it's not stopping organizations from taking their companies far and wide.
Yeah, there needs to be a balance, doesn't there, between being more climate conscious when it comes to incentive travel, but also why you're organizing those incentive travel trips. What's the reasons behind it? And Stephanie spoke very eloquently about the soft and the hard reasons behind why people do incentive travel.
Yeah, she did. And what that brought home was just the fact of, yes, there's always got to be numbers, there's got to be some kind of metrics in there. But this whole idea of being local with the local culture and helping to create some kind of legacy by being involved in that destination is something that a lot of organizations are looking for. Now, whether that means that there's a little bit of a shift away from companies thinking about what they would be doing on a sustainable level and more of a legacy level leads us into a whole new kind of conversation, I think.
Yeah, I hope legacy isn't replacing sustainability. That wouldn't be right. But I do think there's obviously a very set need for incentive travel, especially in this day and age where some of the softer reasons for doing it are so vitally important, along with the harder reasons such as the impact on the bottom line and commerciality. And having that legacy, having that authentic experience is still very important. But yeah, hopefully it's not at the expense of sustainability.
No, that's right. And her point about luxury over uniqueness, luxury always wins. I thought it's really an interesting comment that people do want to have the very best experience that they can whilst they're away from their families and their normal routines and they're traveling and they are with the company. They've worked hard to get a place on an incentive trip.
and they deserve to be rewarded. And I think all of these factors, luxury, but we want to be doing something with the local community, and we also want to be a new destination or somewhere where there are no impact awards, means that it's a nice challenge. It's actually a nice challenge for travel organizers to have.
That's it for episode 3. Thank you so much, Paul. It was really interesting. And we'll be back with episode 4 very soon.
We will indeed, Mike.
Thanks so much for listening to New In Events, a podcast from IBTM. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. Put November 19th to 21st in your diaries for IBTM World in Barcelona. And follow us on our social media channels for all the latest updates. Until next time.